Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. My name is Jennifer Stone, and I'm filling in for Dave Pezzo today, along with Erica Much. Erica used to join me all the time, but she had a great 2020.
I did. We had a little girl in May, and so we've been enjoying her so much. She's just such a joy. We're having so much fun. So okay. I've been busy a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's first priority, of course.
Yep.
Good. So we were talking a lot about what we wanted to cover today on the show. And what we thought about was basically what are frequently asked questions and what we are talking about and what questions clients come in with. And we figured, you know, if most clients ask it, you're probably interested as well.
Exactly. There's a lot of topics that come to mind.
Yeah. But also we love live calls. So phone number is 580-KIDO 580-5436 or email jstone@petsofinancial.net. All right. So first question I think probably is asked more than any other one. And that is, what is the market going to do?
I wish we had that crystal ball.
Funny thing about that is we don't know. I know everyone wants us to have some opinion. And of course, we can give you some idea of what really short term. But then things like COVID happened last year. The market was doing really, really well. Everything was great. Unemployment rates were good. Everything was great. But then something throws it off. So what we say is you cannot trade or focus on the short term. You always have to focus on the long term. And historically speaking, the market is the best place to make money and the easiest way to make money over the long term and the best returning. So what happens today, tomorrow, next week, next month really is not important to your investing history. If you need money in less than a year, you shouldn't have that invested anyways. That should go in more of an emergency fund or a savings type of an account. So that isn't invested money. So to answer that question, and we answer it the same every time, we don't know what the market's going to do short term. We do know long term, it's the best place for anyone to be that wants to accumulate wealth. Anything to add?
No, I think you pretty much summed that up right off the bat.
Good. Another one is, how much do I need to retire?
Yeah, that's a big question that we get all the time. Mm-hmm.
And that one also depends very much on the person. There are people that want to live on $20,000 a month. They want to travel the world. They have several homes. They don't want to be in Idaho during the winter. They want to be down south. Their cost of living is extremely high. They need to save a lot if they'd like to live like that. Other people, their goal is to garden, read books, hang out with their grandkids, just do things that are less costly so there isn't as much needed. So it used to be the rule of thumb was everybody needs $1 million to invest. And I don't know where that came from. I think maybe it was just a nice number. But unfortunately, a lot of people don't even get started because it's so overwhelming. So the only way to get to where you think you need to be for retirement, and again, it depends very much on the individual, is to get started.
And I think it's funny when people come into the office and want to know how they compare to other people and if they're going to be okay. Do they have as much as, you know, neighbor Joe, that kind of thing. But again, like you said, it really depends on what kind of lifestyle you want to have. Mm-hmm. And it varies greatly, like you said.
It does. It does. And getting started is so important. One of the things that we tell our clients all the time, and we understand that kids aren't that interested in investing. It's just not something that's exciting. There's much more fun things to spend money on. Dave's analogy, the cup of coffee a day. People like to have that instant gratification, especially in this world, because everything is so quick. So no one wants to put money away and wait for it to grow for 40 years and slowly watch you accumulate wealth. So either they don't do it because, you know, I have plenty of time. I'm young. I don't need to get started now. Or they look for something that's more on the gambling side, like the GameStop, and they start to pay attention to more social media. And that whole Robinhood investing, I've looked at the app myself, and they give you stock. And so you accumulate shares when you first open the account, and then you're buying fractional shares, and you don't even understand what you're owning. Again, not investing. That's much higher risk and more gambling. Mm-hmm. So we want to stay away from that. If we can just get people putting away $50 a month, $150 a month, and the sooner you start, the better chance you have to be a millionaire.
And I had a funny conversation with someone just yesterday, actually, and they were telling me when they got started investing and kind of what pushed them to. But they said initially they didn't think they were going to make it past 40 years old, 50 years old. So they said, why would I be saving? Well, that's not something you can count on. Again, going back to that crystal ball, we don't have that. We don't know when the end of our life will be. So not putting away money just because you don't think you're going to make it that far isn't the most prudent way to think about things.
It really is. Because what if you live to be 100?
Exactly.
And then you have no money and you're going to work for the rest of your life?
And with medical technology, we're all going to be bionic humans in the future anyways.
Absolutely. So that's another reason to get started and start putting money away, because if you do the work up front, you won't have to worry as much towards the end to save as much. We've run scenarios where people say, you know, I'm just getting started. I'm 50 years old. I'd really like to retire at 65. The amount that someone has to put away to accomplish that is more than most people make a month. So don't wait. Get started today. Get your money going. Talk to your kids. Get them interested in it. And they'll end up looking like heroes when they get to retirement.
Exactly.
All right. And this, let's go to health insurance in retirement. Since we're talking retirement, we might as well stay on that same topic. You do need health and health insurance in retirement. 65, you'll get Medicare. But prior to, if you retire early, it's very expensive. The Affordable Care Act isn't affordable if you make even a little bit of income. A family making 65, a couple, if they get on the Affordable Care Act and then they make just a dollar over what that limit is, they literally fall off a cliff, meaning their premiums have been, we've seen, up to $2,000 per month per person. And they find that out when they file their taxes, because it's a credit that's taken back. So know what you're buying when you go in. Talk to a broker, an insurance broker. Honestly, you don't pay any more to work with someone than doing it on your own. It's very complicated. If you need a referral, we know a couple great agencies here in town. We don't do it too much. Mm-hmm. We don't want to understand that. It's way too much for us to cover. So we have people that we trust to help walk you through that.
Right. And that goes back to the, do you have enough to retire? Thinking about your cash flow, those healthcare expenses. It's a big one that sometimes people just forget about, right? Mm-hmm. So making sure you're, if you are retiring early, that you're budgeting that in.
Yeah. And you have to have insurance.
Yep.
I know it's expensive for people. And sometimes they think, well, I'm just going to roll the dice and not have it. Not a good idea. You need to have some form of insurance. It's super expensive. Maybe you have to work a little bit longer just to get those benefits, but it's one thing you have to plan for. All right. Before we dive into the next topic, we're going to jump over to the phones. Good morning, Jim.
Hello, Jennifer and Tom. Sit in. How are you doing?
We're good, Jim. How are you?
What is your sit-in's name?
It's Erica.
Yeah, her mic wasn't turned on at the beginning, so. Oh.
I wondered about that, because I couldn't really hear her, and I thought, well, maybe it was just me. Yeah.
Oh. No, you said something like she had an interesting 2020, and I might have picked up that she had a daughter or something.
She did. Yep, she had a baby in May.
How nice. But anyway, I mean, that wasn't on the mic.
Oh, okay, well, we'll make her tell her story again.
I just wanted to make a... an interesting comment, how, you know, you're talking about the long term and all this kind of thing and wealth and everything, and how people, we all know, don't think logically whatsoever. I mean, a lot of times they're afraid of doomsday. They think the world is going to end, mm-hmm. and yet they try to harbor money. Now, if the world is ending, harboring money isn't going to be any good anyway.
You are right. Agreed. Yep. Yep, no, that's absolutely right. And how many times have we heard the world's going to end and this is a sign and that's a sign and everybody calls for it, but we're still here and we're still doing great. So
yeah, I don't know. You get into the psychology of human beings. And one thing that's kept me safe was I was never on the inside. I was never in the clique, so to speak, right? Now, that kept me from getting addicted to alcohol, smoking, drugs, whatever it is to fit in. And also, it kept me somewhat wealthy. And a good old expression, the best things in life are free, which they are.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to have a big car, just go out and smell the roses and whatever. Breathe the fresh air. Take off the mask when you're not around people, you know.
Yeah. Yep.
A little common sense, right?
Yep, and fresh air is so important. And it's going to be another beautiful day, it looks like. So we got to go out and enjoy that, too.
Well, I was outside. What I like to do outside, I had been in band for the longest time, and one of my hobbies is tape recording and recording my own music. And what I love to do on nice days, which I did yesterday for the first day, is to sit outside, drink a few beers, and listen to music. and that is, I don't know, very rewarding and not expensive. And anyway.
Yeah, that sounds really great, actually.
So anyway, I just wanted to call in to prime your collar pump and hope you too have a great show.
Thanks, Jim. We appreciate you very much.
Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, we'll jump over to Tom. Hi, Tom. How are you?
Hey, it's good. Fine, thanks. You guys sound like great ladies. I just wanted to tell you that.
Thank you.
I mean, I have to say that because sometimes some of the things I say seem a little bit contentious, but you had mentioned something about we were all going to be bionic anywhere, and I caught on to that, and I thought, I wonder if you guys understand that that's called transhumanism, and it's actually a means of ultimate control. And so without going down the conspiratorial rabbit hole, all is not well in Zion at all. And I think it just depends on how much you actually know in the area of politics. I've been radically involved in politics in this area for 20 years. I've tried to understand history and current events and all of that. I love the fact that you guys are optimistic. Dave Petzo's a lot that way, and I kind of make fun of him, but I love him at the same time, kind of a thing, you know?
Right, yeah.
But you guys were talking about money, and it's really interesting that the guy before calls and goes, well, if it's the end of the world, you guys, you know, it's kind of ironic that you're going to be saving, and it's true, it is. All that being said, you know, there's guys like myself that give every moment of every day to the freedom of this country and to the state of Idaho, and yet somehow we don't have, you know, we don't have two pennies to rub together. So, you know, when you talk about the fact that we're going to get Medicare, I don't want federal subsidies. And I think that more people should pay attention to the long-term consequences, not only of their income, but about the freedom for future generations. I don't want government subsidies. That's going to come with strings. And that means that they could force me to take the jab. That means they could force me to be able to do anything they want. And so we need to be really, really cautious when we start talking about this thing in kind of a lackadaisical way where, you know, that's just the way it is, because I would encourage you to look up Agenda 2030 principles, and then go to the World Economic Forum website and look up the World Economic Forum agenda. And what you'll find out is a complete transformation of our government and the globe, quite frankly, from our precious constitutional republic to a world dominated power. So let's just be a little bit more careful and a little bit more respectful for those that really are giving everything that we have.
Hey, Tom, thanks. I hate to cut you off, but we have to take a quick break. So appreciate the call.
I'm used to it. No, that's okay.
Very much.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to go more into some of the questions we would like and most clients answer. And we appreciate the phone call, so give us a call if you'd like, 580-KIDO. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. Jennifer Stone and Erica Much filling in for Dave Petzo on this beautiful looking cloudy Saturday morning now. Thought we'd answer an email that was sent to Dave last week, since we're going to be coming up to a break at the top of the hour. A lady has $400,000 in a variable annuity, and she's been talking about getting some of those funds out and wondered if it was able to actually put it directly into a Roth IRA. I guess kind of like a conversion. She equated it to an IRA being able to go into a Roth. From what the email sounds, it sounds like this is not an IRA or a qualified annuity. It's a non-qualified. So what that means is if you put $100,000 into it, the growth over and above that is taxed as ordinary income when you take it out. However, since it's not an IRA and not qualified, it cannot be transferred into or converted to a Roth. And you may not want to do that anyways, because the whole gain would be taxable, but you can't do that on a non-qualified transaction. You may want to look at the expenses, how much you have in it, what the growth is. There's so many things to look at to determine the best way of getting the funds out of an annuity. but you cannot convert a non-qualified to a Roth IRA. So if you have questions more on that, we're happy to answer them. You can call our office and we'd go over that in more detail. But it's tricky once you get that huge gain inside of a non-qualified, how to get that out without paying a lot of tax. It's tricky. So you might start dripping it out over a few years. You might take chunks in years where you're in a lower bracket. There's ways to do it, but it's not really that easy to get it out without paying a lot of tax. Which leads into what's the difference between a Roth and an IRA. We'll cover that more when we come back in the next hour, since the music is now playing. So again, we're open phone calls, emails, whatever you'd like to get in touch with us, please do so. And we're going to come back at the next hour and cover Roth IRAs, joint IRAs, all these different comments that we get all the time. But please call us 580-KIDO, 580-5436. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. Jennifer Stone and Erica Mutch filling in for Dave Pezzo. So at the top of the last hour, when we opened the show, we actually were talking a little bit about Erica and why she was absent for a while and left me and didn't come do the show.
Right. I did have an interesting 2020. We had a baby in May, a little girl. And so I've been a little bit busy on the weekends and during the week, but it's been such an awesome experience. She's such a joy. 9 months old already. Time just flies so fast.
It does. And we, of course, enjoy the stories because now her latest thing is giving everything a thumbs up. So watching the videos and seeing the stories, that's what it's all about. It's those little ones.
Yep. It's really fun. Really fun.
Good. All right. So back to frequently asked questions. Should I fund a Roth, a traditional IRA, and what is the difference between the two? So a traditional IRA is the one where you take money, put it away pre-tax, so it reduces your taxable income. That we look at saying, you know, I think I'm in a higher tax bracket today than I will be in retirement. So when you take the money out, all the growth, including what you put in, is taxable as ordinary income. So when we look at that and we say, I don't know, I'd kind of like to do a little bit of both. So a Roth, you pay the tax, you put it away. It grows tax-free, and all distributions come out tax-free. And another thing that a lot of people don't know, and we don't encourage, we kind of like to keep it a secret, is what you put into a Roth can always come out. So if you put in $5,000, it grew to $10,000. That $5,000 can come out without tax or penalty at any age. Don't encourage that, though, because we want that tax-free compounding. But that's the difference between the two. Years ago, Roths didn't exist. I actually remember when they started. Don't quote me on the date. Don't remember. Doesn't matter. But when they started, people didn't really pay that much attention because it was all about saving tax dollars today. I understand that you don't want to pay any more than you have to, but I also look at that and say maybe it makes some sense to pay a little tax now to have tax-free money in retirement to balance out your taxable income. Because too much taxable income makes Social Security taxable, makes everything else in a higher bracket. So it kind of has a rolling effect. Everything becomes more taxed if you have taxable income added to it.
And we were talking about, you know, getting younger people interested in investing in the Roth. I mean, we still call that magic money around the office just because it's so important, especially, you know, as someone in high school is working a part-time job in the summer and has $5,000 of income and is in a really low tax bracket. Well, why not have them get started in the Roth, put that away? It doesn't have an effect on their tax bracket right now. Get that money growing tax-free. When you take it out, it's tax-free. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing.
It is. But remember too, there are income limitations. So the younger you are before you really, really start making great money in your career, that's the time to also put it away because of that tax-free growth, as well as your income may prohibit you from doing it later. There are also backdoor Roths, but those get a little bit confusing for people because if you have any other IRA, including a simple, including a SEP, then any money that you put into a non-deductible IRA, which is how you get the backdoor step in, is considered pro rata with the taxable dollars. So be sure you talk to your accountant before you try to do a backdoor Roth or a financial advisor. All right, we're going to go to the phones. Hi, Terry.
Good morning, ladies. How you doing?
Good morning.
I'll tell you what, it's just terrible having to deal with all the first world problems we've got around here today, so.
It is, especially really good pastries, right?
Yeah, that's a rough one for us.
Yeah. Well, I just had to help your COVID-15 out there, you know.
We appreciate it.
But the question, got a whole bunch of stuff to ramble on about, but the biggest thing that hit my pea brain today was just what kind of cash positions should a person, you know, old, retired, don't need a lot of money, trying to spend money, and I hate to do that, but how much to keep in an emergency fund, how much to keep in these trying times for in your investment account in cash to be ready to pick up good deals when everything goes to heck in a handcart in a couple of weeks when, you know, our budget, national budget goes to heck.
Right. You know? So, Terry, usually, I mean, when you're just kind of getting started, that 3 to 6 months of living expenses in an emergency fund is perfect, right? So that varies for every person, whether they're spending $3,000 a month or $5,000 a month. And we usually say just on those fixed expenses. So, you know, your mortgage, your car, the utilities, not the fun stuff, not the going out to eat or extras. So that 3 to 6 months of cash is perfect. If you're a little bit on the older side, maybe retired and aren't working currently, you know, just having a little bit on the side, $5,000-$10,000 is appropriate to make sure, you know, if your car breaks down, your hot water heater needs to be replaced. That's a good spot to have some cash just sitting around. Although I know the banks aren't paying much of anything right now, even if you're sitting in I put in quotes, high yield checking account or savings account. So just making sure you have a little bit that you have 100% access to, just in case those one-off situations comes up, is very important. Inside of the investment account, kind of a different animal. So earlier this week, there was a little bit of volatility in the markets, and we had looked at buying for some people that had a little bit of extra cash or had just put cash into the account to take advantage of that dip. So keeping some cash, you know, 2 to 3% in a portfolio is good. But if someone's just putting in money or is kind of dollar cost averaging in, looking for those dips to then throw in money is perfect.
Yeah, well, I'm not looking to question the good work you've been doing for me. It's just I thought I'd, you know, reiterate that out there that have a little cushion is a good thing to do.
Yeah, because the people get hit with those surprise events and life happens to everyone. And if you don't have cash on hand for those small things, it does add up quickly. And we laugh. We were teasing Tom in the office because I think it was last year. Every car he had broke down. Everything that could go wrong went wrong. And he just sat around going, my goodness, what am I going to do? He's very good and takes good care of his money. Not at all. But he just sat there and thought, wow, if I didn't have an emergency fund and everything went down at the same time, how am I going to pay for it? So it's always good to have some cash on hand.
Right. Oh, and I did have one technical bone to pick with y'all. Are you going to repost last week's podcast? Because we only came up with like the first 15 minutes or so of the show.
We're going to have to look at the people in control of that and find out, because we did notice that as well, that it was only a very short amount. So we haven't had a chance to discuss that yet, but we'll find out for sure.
Yeah, okay. You just missed the second hour is basically what it amounted
yep,
to.
Yep. And so. Dave was really hyped too. He's like, wow, you got to listen to it. I've got so much on the second hour. So yeah, we'll definitely find out if we can get that done.
You're trying to move him out anyway, right? Sending him off golfing all the time and whatnot.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. He needs to relax a little bit. Yep.
Okay. Well, you kids have a good weekend.
All right, Terry, you too. Take care.
All right. Bye.
Bye. All right. So, yes, we will definitely get onto the podcast and make sure that we can get that posted. No worries at all. Everybody's nodding at us, so I think we're in good shape on that. One more thing I wanted to talk on with IRAs. We're always asked if you can own them jointly with your spouse. IRAs are individual retirement accounts. You name your spouse as a beneficiary, but they are not jointly owned. So, no, you cannot own a joint IRA. Not allowed, but name your spouse and it's pretty much passes on like they were jointly owned.
Exactly. And just one other quick topic on that was the spousal IRA. So a lot of times only one of the spouses is working. And as long as there's enough earned income, you can contribute for that person that might be a stay-at-home mom or stay-at-home dad into an IRA up to the maximum amount. So as long as you're making, let's say you're over 50, it's $7,000 a year. As long as you have $14,000 of income that year, you can contribute for both, each spouse.
Yep, yep. And you can do one or the other, but you can't have more than one IRA or more than one Roth. So if the limit is over 57,000, you could put 3,500 into an IRA and 3,500 into a Roth. You can't do seven and seven. So make sure you're not overfunding investments as well. All right, gonna jump back to the phones again. Good morning, Steve.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, how are you?
Good, I had a quick question about converting a 401k to a Roth.
Okay.
And if there's limitations on that, I was contemplating, just because I'm in a high tax bracket, that if there was a market downturn, that I would take my 401k and convert it and pay the tax on it while the value was down. Does that make any financial sense?
It really depends on your tax bracket. I hear what you're saying. I like the idea of the recovery to grow back tax-free under that Roth umbrella. It's a great idea. But if you said you're in a high tax bracket, you also have to understand, is it worth it? How much time until retirement? There's so many things to go into that, because if you're paying 30% and then you owe state tax as well, is it worth losing 30, 35% of your income to get that into a Roth? So you have to do the math and see if that makes sense for you. On the tax side, would the growth back be enough to make up for that? There's a lot of things to calculate into that.
Okay.
Do you see? Do you understand what we're saying?
Yeah. Okay. Yep, yep.
Okay.
And then are there income limitations, or is there a cap on the Roth that prevents me from just converting or just switching my 401k to a Roth?
There's no income limitations. There used to be 100,000, but they took that away. So no, there's unlimited on the conversion.
Cool. That's it. Thank you.
You bet. Have a great weekend.
All right. You too.
Great. All right. So also, we're up to that deadline where you can fund for 2020 still, up until April 15th. So if you haven't funded your Roth, you haven't funded any sort of an IRA, keep that in mind as well. Perfect. And then make sure your beneficiaries are up to date. As we were just talking about not being able to do a joint owner on an IRA, you also want to make sure you have a beneficiary listed, because if not, it will go by either the default plan document, which is on whoever the custodian is, or it could have to be funded or sent to your estate. If it goes into your estate, all of that becomes taxable at the highest bracket immediately and then distributed to who you want it to go to.
Yeah, a lot of the times, if your situation is pretty simple, you want it to pass to your spouse and then to your kids, you can easily designate wherever you are, even on bank accounts too. As we were talking about with Terry, with cash, if you're sitting on some cash at the bank, just go there, ask them for their form. It's either called transfer on death or payable on death, and they'll be able to, you can just add your spouse or add your kids as primary or contingent and just kind of make sure that that's clean and easy in case something happens to you.
And a lot of times when you go into an attorney to do your estate plan and you set up a trust, again, I'm going to preface this with, we're not attorneys, but be careful when you name the trust as the beneficiary of your IRA. Sometimes they pass through, which just is an extra step, and it goes directly to the beneficiary of that trust. In other words, you want it all to go to your children. You can put them as contingent on your IRA as well, and then it doesn't go through the trust and then to them. Because there are rules on distributions and things when they go through that trust that may not be there when they're just named as contingent. So ask those questions when you're doing your estate planning to your attorney and make sure that they're covering that. All right, going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to continue with frequently asked questions. Give us a call at 580-KIDO, 580-5436. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. Jennifer Stone and Erica Mutch filling in for Dave Petzo this morning. Talking about frequently asked questions. So it's a good time to ask a question if you have one. We're trying to cover as many topics as we can on questions that were asked pretty much on a regular basis. Another one this time of year is 529 plans and if they can fund them for prior year. 529 plans for the calendar year cut off, so you have to get it in the year that you're wanting to make it if you want that state tax deduction. So Idaho has a really decent plan, we feel. So if you want to set one up, it can be pretty much done online 100%. You link your bank account, you pick your funds, and you can even start an automatic investment and directly pay the schools. I know this. I used it for both of my girls when they were going to college. So it's a really easy way, easy to set up. And, you know, if you want to do just a little, just like Dave always says, no one sits around saying, I don't want to help my kids go to school normally. So even a little bit, just so that they can help cover some of those costs, because it's going to be expensive. Things could change. We know with more virtual learning, maybe costs will come down. But at this point, doesn't look like it. So it's good to put away a little bit. You can also change beneficiaries. So if you have more than one child, name one. And then if they don't use it, it can be changed to someone else. Okay. So we like 529 plans. And again, the state plan, I believe it's idsaves.org. So if you look that up, you can start a plan today if you wanted to for your child.
And they have great, really easy investment options, too. So there's age-based 0 to 3, 3 to 5. So it's really easy to just go in there and pick one that's appropriate for your situation.
Good. 401ks without a match. People feel that if they're not getting a matching contribution, that they should not invest in a 401k. We do not agree with that. Yes, it's nice to get a match because you get an instant return on whatever you put in. It's lovely if companies can do that for you. But a 401k is one of the easiest ways because it comes right out of your paycheck. Normally, you don't even miss it, and you can just put it away every month and start accumulating wealth tax-free. It needs to be done if you have that. And if you don't know the benefits at your employer, you just started or you haven't checked them for a while, see what's available to you.
And a lot of people don't realize that their employer might even offer a Roth 401k option. So we were just talking about the benefits of the traditional versus the Roth. So if they do, that's a great way to take a look at your tax bracket, see if you should be splitting your contributions into both sides of the plan.
Yeah. And a lot of times with clients that have reached the wonderful age of 50, you get a catch up on contributions in all plans. So if you've been used to paying tax, you're maxing out that IRA or the 401k side, the traditional pre-tax side, and you want to save more, put your catch up in the Roth.
Mm-hmm.
You're used to paying that tax on that anyway, so it's not going to feel much different, but that's a way to put money into it. And you can still do a Roth on the outside, too, as long as your income limits allow.
Right. And some people say, well, is it too late to start doing that? No, it's never too late. Even if you're 2 years from retirement and you just start funneling money into the Roth, it's still a good idea.
It'll still give you some tax free. There are some rules on taking it out if you're over 59 and a half, but we're getting in the weeds there. It doesn't matter. If you're there, ask and you'll know. And it's pretty clear when you get to that point. So Roth, again, like Erica said, magic money. The more you can have in a Roth when you retire, the more flexibility you have. So get the Roth started. All right. Life insurance. Shouldn't I have life insurance for life? This one is an interesting one because there are times in life when you need life insurance. Erica needs life insurance right now because she has a baby. Mm-hmm. They have equal income pretty much in the family, so they depend on each other's income to get by. That's an insurable need. Then you want life insurance. Then you get to a point when your kids are grown, they're gone out of the house, maybe all your bills are paid for. If one of you wasn't able to work or chose not to work, it wouldn't affect your income. So you sit down and you say, do we still need to keep paying on life insurance when we don't have an insurable need? Great thing about term insurance is you can just stop paying it and it doesn't cost a lot when you own it. And if you stop, there's no penalties and you can just be done.
Right. You've accumulated your wealth, so you have enough for both of you to live off of, then one of you can just fine as well.
So again, look at your situation. And again, everything we talk about here is very specific to you. So don't take this as a blanket statement. It's kind of hard to know everyone's situation, obviously over the radio. So make sure you look at yours, especially if you're ill or you've had some sort of disease that potentially you cannot get insurance again. There are reasons to keep it, even if you don't feel you need it. But definitely take a look at it before you drop anything. Or if you want to switch, get a health check before you drop your life insurance. Don't just drop it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. So titling of accounts, I think Erica kind of covered that with adding pay on death.
Right. And there was one thing that before we just took our last break about the trust. If you're working with an attorney and you did create a trust, a lot of times people forget to tell their financial advisor that they're working with that they now do have a trust and the assets don't get put into that trust. So just make sure if you create that trust that you are telling the professionals that you work with that you do have one and need to fund it.
Just having a trust established doesn't do anything, because you can have that piece of paper sitting there saying, I set up the XYZ trust, dated this, and it's ready to go. But unless you retitle your accounts that are able to be titled in the name of the trust, there's nothing in it. It's an unfunded trust, so it doesn't do any good. It doesn't automatically happen. So make sure, as Erica was saying, that you title things properly, because you go through all the expense to get that set up. And again, I'm going to push back to our YouTube. You can watch Sandra Clapp, who's an attorney here in Eagle, that did an overview of how she feels on some of this estate planning and gives a good understanding of why you need a trust and why normally it's not needed in Idaho. But I would suggest you watch it. She does a great job. Mm-hmm. And now we're talking about YouTube. Check it out again. We put up some new videos, the Ten Commandments, Dave's Ten Commandments. They're in two parts. Both are very short, but they're very easy to understand and they're great information. So don't forget that we have a wonderful YouTube channel. Just look it up at Petso Financial, subscribe and sign up for alerts so that you get the new ones when they pop in. All right. How are investment advisors paid? This is something that we like to talk about because we don't like it to be vague. A lot of times insurance, people that sell insurance, it's paid by the insurance company, they say, but that gets to the point that you say, well, obviously, if you're getting a service, you're paying something. So it's kind of hidden in the product. So you pay expenses to the insurance company who's paid the investment advisor, or excuse me, the insurance agent. I won't say investment advisor. So you are paying for that inside of the expenses of those contracts. So don't feel like, you know, I put $100,000 in, it's still worth $100,000. So obviously I didn't pay anything. Surrender charges, when they come out, 10%, 8%, whatever that might be, is normally what the insurance person was paid to sell that product. So look at the details of those contracts, because they are spelled out a little bit better. I've seen a few prospectuses and information where it's clearer, but that's how an insurance agent gets paid. Yes, from the company, but you're paying the fees to the company that pays that agent. So you are directly paying it. Mm-hmm. Okay. We are fiduciaries. Fiduciaries mean that we have to put our clients' interest in front of them. So whatever we do is in your best interest. We don't get, like Dave likes to say, trips to Disneyland, special bonuses, anything for selling products, because we don't sell products. We build investment portfolios. We get paid a management fee to pick and choose the investments inside that portfolio. If you were to leave us as a client, you actually would get a refund on any of the fees that you were paid in advance to us. So it's just a fee for the services we provide.
And your monthly statement shows, it says, you know, Petso management fee, and it gives you that exact dollar amount. So you're never questioning, oh, I wonder what I paid them this quarter or what it might be. So that should usually be pretty transparent with any financial advisor that you're working with. And if it's not, don't be afraid to ask. I mean, you should know exactly what you're paying and what you're receiving value for. So it's a good question. Sometimes people feel a little awkward asking it, but ask.
And we're never, questions to us are important, because that means either we haven't explained it clear enough or it was a little confusing and you're uncertain. So please ask those questions. As Erica was saying, anyone you're working with should be more than willing to share with you how they're compensated.
And nobody takes offense to that.
Nope. And if they do, that's an issue. So mm-hmm. No, please ask those questions. Make sure you know what you're getting, as well as what do those fees cover? Is it just asset management? Is it financial planning? Can I call whenever I want? Are there hourly fees on top of that? There's all sorts of ways that fee advisors get compensated. Our firm only takes management fees. Occasionally we'll do financial planning for a fee, but normally it's all wrapped up in that quarterly fee that you pay us. Very transparent. Like Erica says, it shows up on it'll show the total on a monthly statement, but it's a quarterly. You'll see that little amount that you're paying.
Yep.
Okay. So look for it. It's there. All right. So I am going to move on to, this is an interesting one too. What is an ETF? An ETF is an exchange traded fund. Basically, and again, sometimes this gets confusing, but I'm going to try to bring it down and not be too weedy. But mutual funds are what they call open-ended. That means anytime you buy, more shares are issued. An exchange traded fund is more like a stock in the way that they are trading price-wise. So if you want to buy an exchange-traded fund or an ETF, whatever the price is when you pull the trigger is what you're going to pay for that fund. Mutual funds value at the end of the day. So you don't know what you're going to pay for it till the market closes. So exchange-traded funds, they do create their portfolios, or you can actually buy them from someone else, kind of like a stock. So it's a great way to get broad diversification in something that's easy to trade. So they're very similar to mutual funds. A lot of them mirror indices, like index funds, but some of them are more actively managed. So they're an interesting way because they're treated better for taxes. There's so many things with ETFs that are interesting, but they have to be a little bit more active for us to fully use only ETFs. We still like mutual funds. We believe strongly in active management. So I think that one is a little more confusing. So questions, of course, you know where we're at. So again, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to cover another one that's out there all the time. Why does inflation affect interest rates? So when you get back, we'll cover that. Give us a call if you have any questions. 580-KIDO. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. Jennifer Stone and Erica Much filling in for Dave Pezzo. Today's been filled with questions that were asked all the time. So we're loving to do frequently asked questions. And we did get an email from Mike. He's wondering what to do with the bond portion of his allocation. He's in first year of retirement, 30 years to go, probably in life expectancy. And with the rates the way they are, how does he handle that? Also, what to do with emergency funds since rates are so low. So let's cover the emergency fund first. That one's pretty easy. We don't look at emergency funds as needing to be invested. That's more of insurance on your income. So that isn't something that we think you should take any risk with. And understanding that and not being disappointed when you're not earning anything should be okay. We want that to be what it is when you need it, but don't let your emergency funds grow too big. I mean, if you're going into retirement, you probably have a pretty set income. So if you don't need as much in an emergency fund, trim it back a bit. Most of the time when we have larger emergency funds, if people are self-employed, they have varying income streams, something that's not steady, that does, we feel, determine that you need to have a bit more in those emergency funds just in case something really goes wrong and you're not working for 3 to 6 months, or something gets shut down like we never thought would happen and you have no income. That's when larger emergency funds are important. But don't look at that as something you need to earn income on. Bonds. This one we've been struggling with for a very long time. We've looked at interest rates being low forever, it seems like. So bonds make no sense. The traditional 60-40 blend is, we feel, dead at this point, just because you can't put such a high percentage in something that earns zero and expect to be able to draw 3-4% from your portfolio. We look for alternatives as much as we can through dividend paying stocks. If we can get a couple percent or 3% on Pfizer versus 1.5% on a treasury, I'll take the growth potential of a company that's pretty stable with a good yield over putting it in something that I know I'm losing to inflation every year. Also, we look at real estate through a mutual fund. So there's definitely funds that are called interval funds that trade quarterly, but they're out there on the market and they are through mutual funds. So they're fairly liquid. That's another way that you can put a little more yield in your portfolio. But again, it's really tricky right now. There's just not an easy way to get that yield that was taken up by the bond portfolio. So you have to find great alternatives. So questions, you can give us a call. Maybe we can help walk through that more, but I hope that answers what you were looking for. Good. Okay. So moving on. This one I think is kind of cute, and we'll get to inflations and interest in just a minute, but I think this one's kind of a cute question. Well, I've retired. I'm over 65. Why do I still have to pay taxes? Paying taxes is not an age thing. You have to pay taxes on anything that's never been taxed. So income, as well as income from IRA distributions, which now you don't have to take till 72 if you weren't 70 and a half last year. So there's ways that you just don't have a choice. You have to continue. Sometimes your bracket is lower. I've actually seen people that have higher brackets in retirement because they saved so well. But it's just unfortunately something that you never don't do is pay taxes. And Social Security also can be taxable. We see up to 85% of that if you have other income. So that also can be taxable. And all of this is up to change because right now we're in a very heavily spending environment, which means at some point tax rates or something is going to have to give to pay that debt back. So doesn't matter how old you are, you're always going to have to pay some tax. So another question is, why is inflation affected by interest rates? This one, Erica and I sat around and tried to come up with a really good analogy to hopefully make it clear because it does get, again, weedy, like we like to say. But if you think about it this way, when interest rates are low, people borrow more money. That means there's more money in the economy to buy things. So there's maybe not as much like the housing markets. Look at that. There's not enough homes to support the volume of people that want to buy them. So prices go up. So if you think about it logically, if there's people buying money, there's more money in the economy. People are trying to find a home. There's not as many homes. So those prices go up. That's inflation. So now when interest rates go up, not as many people can actually borrow or choose to borrow. So there's less money in the economy. So housing prices potentially could come down. That's what we're looking at when you look at interest and inflation. Hopefully that's clear. Erica, can you add?
No, that was perfectly clear though.
Okay, good, good. Because it was one that we're trying to find an easy way to make that understandable. Hopefully that helps a little bit. Also, moving on to, let's see, what else do we have? Erica, do you have anything you wanted to add?
Well, they're not on the interest in inflation, but I did have an interesting question. I was talking to some friends about what confuses them in finances or what kind of questions have they run into. And one of my friends had someone in college that was confused with credit cards and how those payments work. This person thought that if you were making your minimum payment, that the credit card would be paid off. And, you know, it would just be gone. Like it was a regular bill. There wasn't any interest earning on it. You paid that minimum payment and over a certain amount of time, it was gone. That is not how this works. So the credit card bill, they give you a minimum that you have to pay, but you're still getting an interest rate on the rest of the funds on there. So it's ever growing unless you're paying off more than the minimum. From their perspective, they want you to pay on it as long as possible. They want you to pay the minimum payment because then they get more money over the long run. But that was a kind of a confusing question for this person was, okay, if I only pay the minimum balance, the minimum required payment, that whole credit card bill will not go away. It won't. It'll just keep increasing and increasing and increasing. So that kind of goes along with, okay, a lot of people look at maybe debt consolidation and where do we go to wrap things up to just kind of make this magic pill and get their debt gone. So a lot of the times that doesn't make the most sense. Again, as Jennifer said, every situation is different, but a lot of the times these lending firms, predatory lending, wraps up all your debt, gives you a very high interest rate, and it's super hard to pay off. Yes, you don't have your Lowe's or Cabela's or, you know, four or five credit cards sitting out there. You just have this one lump sum, but that's earning, you know, interest on it at a super, super high rate, which makes it even more difficult to pay off. So it's really sad when we see those things happen and just making sure you know exactly what you're getting into, what the interest rate is, how long it's going to take you to pay off is really important. And we can kind of go back to budgeting from the beginning and not getting into that situation, but we know that things do happen.
Yeah, and the hard part with it, when you consolidate debt, a lot of times that's, like Erica said, the magic pill to make it go away. And especially with home values going up, we see a lot of people taking home equity lines and they're paying off their other debt with their home. The scary part about that is when you pay off debt easily and you make it just go away and not struggle and feel the pain of how hard it was to pay that back, you'll end up tend to recharge again because it was really easy to make it go away, right? Your house keeps going up. It's worth a lot. You turn it into almost like back in 06 and 07 when they called homes ATMs. Your home should be an untouchable asset to pay off stuff. If you bought too much, I don't know, cars or toys or whatever it might be, and you now want that to go away, using your home equity to make that go away, and then you build those debts back up again, that's the worst thing you can do. Struggle through paying it off. Anything you struggle with doesn't come back. we had an unfortunate situation, and we see this frequently when people come in with a lot of debt and they want us to find a way to make it go away. They tell us, well, don't you think I should sell my house and pay this off? Then I can buy another house. Or should I take out another loan and pay off my Cabela's, my Lowe's, all these credit cards? Sometimes, honestly, the most recent one, I was frozen looking at it because the only thing I could see was she was bankrupt. And I didn't know what to tell her to do to help walk through this. I was very honest and said, I'm not a debt counselor. But when you're not concerned and you see that with people, they're not overly concerned, then I worry that they'll just do it again. So please, when you're going through debt consolidation, you're thinking about this, the predatory lender that Erica mentioned was actually charging 33%. There's no way that'll ever go away. So please just think about it before you do those debt consolidations. Look at what you're paying. Pay attention to the interest rates on charge cards. If you're actually carrying balances, do you know what they are? Do you know what you're paying to have that money? Because when you're working to pay debt, you don't work for yourself. You work for these people you owe money to. That's not freedom. All right, we're going to jump to the phones real quick. Good morning, Jim.
Morning again.
Hello.
Yeah. You were mentioning that some people didn't know about credit card debt, they paying the minimum. And it is hard to believe that people are that ignorant these days. But I picked up a lot of stuff, ethics, from my grandfather, who had lived through a couple of World Wars and the Depression. And two things in specific, I remember, he would always say, debt is not good, did not like debt, and if you don't have cash for something, you don't need it.
Right.
Well, I've never liked debt. Now, when I bought my house, and I bought my house in 85, cost $36,000, so I financed $26,000. Now, I've always thought, at the time, the interest rates were 8.5%, and I always thought, okay, if you don't like the interest rate, you know, that's an incentive to pay the thing off.
Right.
So I had like a 30-year mortgage, and I paid it off in 14 years. I mean, my goal was to pay the house off, and I calculated I must have saved $50,000 in interest. And so, you know, anyway, being debt-free is a real good feeling, and nobody, you know, debt is not good. Don't be into debt.
You're right, Jim. You're right. We appreciate it. Thank you for calling. We got to take a break. All right. All right. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to cover other topics that we feel are important to you. So give us a call, 580-KIDO. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. Jennifer Stone and Erica Mutch filling in for Dave. Thank you for listening today. We really enjoy doing this, and we're very grateful to have you listening in on your Saturday morning. You have a lot of things you could do, and we appreciate you tuning in and hearing us. So we also wanted to cover some questions that we like to ask clients. So we're flipping it around here. You ask us questions and what we like to ask and find out more about people that come in to visit with us.
Yeah, one of the first things we usually ask people, though, is what brought them in, right? Is retirement on the horizon? Did you just win the lottery? Are you just getting started? So usually we just want to know what brought you in, what finally made you pick up the phone and give us a call and come in for a meeting. But after that, we like to dive a little bit deeper. And, you know, you always hear about what are your goals? What do you want to do? What are your priorities? But really asking more of those personal questions is, where do you see yourself in 3 to 5 years? What does that look like for you? How are you going to be, you know, maybe you're just starting off and you're trying to get through college, or you want to buy a house or pay for kids' college, whatever that might be. So really just asking people, where do you see yourself? What's going on in your life? And that is usually a deep question for some people.
Mm-hmm. And asking open questions like that, we want as much from you as we can get. And sometimes you sit there and you think, well, why am I sharing all of this with my financial advisor? The best thing that we can do is know as much about you as possible. how you think. Another question we ask isn't how do you feel about risk? That's silly because risk sways in the wind. If you were just laid off, your family had COVID, everything in the world to make you think negatively, you're going to have a really low risk tolerance. If you just got a promotion, you got married, you had a baby, life is great, you're going to have a higher risk tolerance. Well, neither one of those are risk tolerance. Those are feelings. What we say is a couple things. What do you need and how can we get you there? So that's why finding out as much as we can about you to get that goal, then we can back into what we need to get you there. Second, when you look at it and you say, you know, I don't know what if I think about the market. So what did you do in 08? What do you mean about 08? Okay, your risk tolerance is pretty high. If you say, you know what, it drove me crazy. I got out. I sold everything. I called my financial advisor constantly because I knew the world was ending. That shows how you handle market declines. That doesn't mean your risk tolerance is very low. That just means we need to spend a bit more time educating you and what the market's going to do because corrections happen frequently. So don't let that be something that stops you and you don't invest ever again because you don't invest looking in the rearview mirror. Listen to the Ten Commandments. You'll hear Dave talk about that. One of the things you have to do is always look forward. What do you want in the next, like Erica said, 1, 3, 5, 10 years retirement? What does that look like? Think about that and see what you think works the best.
And that usually brings up a lot deeper conversation too. So we are talking about finances and that's what made you come in for the meeting. But what are you concerned about non-financially? And a lot of the times that has ties back to finances. So are you scared of, you know, not being able to pay your bills? Or is it something that you want to provide a gift for your grandson in the future? So it goes back to, okay, these are what my desires and wishes are. And a lot of it does go back to finances, even if it doesn't seem like it from the start.
And are you an optimistic or a pessimistic person? As Tom said, yeah, Dave's optimistic. We're optimistic. I don't think you can guide people in investing and taking a chance on putting money in the market and knowing that it'll work long term if you're not optimistic. Optimism is really the only true realism. You have to be an optimistic person just to get by day to day. It's hard. We know there's so much to pull it down and to make you feel concerned and nervous. But that's why we also say turn the noise off. Don't turn us off, but, you know, turn off the crazy noise and be an optimist because you know what? The world is beautiful. You bring babies into the world because you know what? There's a future coming. We know this or we wouldn't do that. We know the world's going to be great. We know that things will change and evolve and things need to shift. And right now things feel upside down and crazy. I know that, but I'm just saying be optimistic. It's important.
Yep. And asking, you know, we like to ask, how do you make those important financial decisions in your life? Because that says a lot about a person. Do you make a spreadsheet, write down every single option, pros and cons, or do you just say, you know what, my gut told me to do this? So that gives us a lot of going back to risk tolerance and how you feel about the market. How do you make those decisions? And it kind of tells us what kind of person you are. If you're, you know, methodical, going through step by step, every dollar kind of budgeting kind of thing, or if it's more, okay, yeah, I know I have enough money. This is the amount I have to spend and it's spent. So how you make those financial decisions is important to us too.
And knowing if you've ever worked with a financial advisor before, that's helpful too, because a lot of it is getting the relationship successful for both of us. We have a first meeting at our office to find out what we can do and make sure that we're a good fit, because we don't want to ever overpromise and underdeliver. So having a breakdown of what you think our responsibilities are to you and what we feel you need to do for us. It has to be a partnership in the financial planning process. Of course, the guiding part to get you to where you need to be is our role. But what I'm saying is we definitely need to know what each person is supposed to be doing and bringing to this relationship.
Right. We want to know exactly what you're looking for from us so that we can make sure we deliver that. And there's no gray area. So if there's something that we can do that, or that you're expecting that we don't know that you're expecting, we need to know that to make sure that we're giving you the kind of service that you want and that you are looking for.
Because some people are big picture. They like to know an overview of what we're doing. They don't want to dig into the weeds and get to know budgeting and all of that or the spreadsheets. And they don't care about charts because it's just not interesting to them. There are other people that really like that information, but your financial advisor doesn't know if you don't explain it. That's why we ask so many questions, because we're trying to get to the root of who you are and what your expectations are.
And that's what's really fun for us, getting to know you guys and walking through life with you. We get to live a lot of lives. So it's fun.
Yep. So thank you for listening and we'll see you next time.